You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Well, I landed on the ground, kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and we're talking moccasin and joke. Where the party go hell? Out in the St. John's Swamps. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, everybody, this is Marco Bill, and Tom is, well, he's out there on special assignment. He's finishing up a project that we're working on, and I'm going to tell you, you're going to see something on the website about it tomorrow. It's really something else. The hoax of the century, and it'll be an enlightening experience. I'm going to forego, doing our shout-outs to our listeners tonight. And the reason is because we've got such a packed show. But don't get me wrong, all of you guys out there, our friends and family, our Bigfoot family. Are what we are all about, and we appreciate everything, and we will recognize every single one of you guys as we go along. Tonight I want to have, I got a good friend of ours, Mark Bosco, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about the latest promotions and things that are going on. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am, Marco Bill. Hey, glad to be on the show again tonight. Another
well,
wonderful
we're happy to
experience.
Have you on here, Mark.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you could pop me on quickly so I could talk about the ongoing success of Tom's films that are playing on demand and starting to be moved into retail locations. We have Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax, which had some special acclaim today, because if folks happen to do a Google search, a Google news search of Bigfoot, a story was popping up. It was the second one listed about Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. So that was pretty exciting, and it talked about how the film's available now on demand for viewers across the country, as well as Bigfoot Lives 2 is available on demand across the United States, Canada, and Puerto Rico. And In the Shadow of Bigfoot, the legendary film, one of the very first and still one of the very best, true classic of the Bigfoot film genre, is also available on demand. And even more exciting, Tom's newest film, Bigfoot Lives 3, we're starting the inroads for a very large on-demand and hopefully in-demand deal, distribution deal for it as well. News forthcoming on that.
My gosh. Now, Mark, one of the things that probably the listeners may not know is when we're saying on-demand, we also have a DVD market as well, correct?
Correct, yeah. So
there's two different things. Gravitas,
films are available on demand. So it's a lot of TV remotes today literally have an on demand button. You hit that and you just start looking for the Bigfoot films.
That's on cable, different cable companies, right?
Different cable companies across the United States, different cable carriers. But as you noted, there's also the DVDs, and those, that's what I mentioned quickly, are starting to appear in retail outlets across the country. And we'll start giving Marco and the rest of the folks the information at the stores are available so they can start posting that on the website. But as always, they're also available via the website and Amazon as well. But it's really exciting because this is the first time the whole series of the Searching for Bigfoot Team's films are available all over the place, literally, both electronic delivery and in packaged goods DVD delivery to people literally all across the United States.
Now, have they started the Bigfoot week or month?
Yes, it was a slower rollout, and you know, it always comes down to technology. Some of the systems weren't up and running. Some of the cable operators are it's funny because in the cable world, they consider a small cable operator of 250 or 300,000 subscribers, which is a lot of people, but that's small. So some of the smaller ones weren't on. But now all three films are live across the country, and you know, that's what we've dubbed Bigfoot Week, you know, much like Shark Week. It literally is the very first time a series of films from the same person in the same subject category have ever been released all at once, on demand, at the same time. So it's really exciting. It's really, really, really big stuff. You know, it's just wonderful working with Tom and the rest of the team because, you know, the passion's there. And when I work, do my job, and sell the films, it's easy to do because they can understand the passion behind it and they see the results of that in the projects.
Well, that's great. And that link that you were talking about, I've put the Google search, I've put a link up on the Bigfoot Live website, www.bigfootlive.com. Underneath the last entry of the show tonight, there's a link there, and it basically it shows that Google flyer that's going around on Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax, which is pretty neat.
There'll be more of that to come as the weeks progress. We're also starting a very targeted outreach campaign. You know, the listeners and the fans and the people who are part of the world of Bigfoot all get it and understand. It's part of my job, you know, in working with Tom and the rest of the folks to make sure the rest of the world understands this too and gets a glimpse of what's going on. So we're going to be working real hard to make sure we build the awareness amongst everyone about the opportunity to see these films and really, you know, understand what Tom and the rest of the team are doing here.
Well, Mark, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight to tell us that and give us all the good info on it. Could you? I'm going to mute you out. You can stay on if you probably don't have time, but I'm going to mute you out, and I want to thank you. We'll have you on again a little later in the month just to see how things are going. How's that?
It sounds good. Always a pleasure, Marco Bill.
Well, thank you, Mark, and for coming on, and I appreciate it a whole bunch.
Certainly.
Take care now. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mark Bosco, and he's given us a little bit of an update on what's going on. Ladies and gentlemen, the chat room this evening, something's wrong. I don't know what it is. It's probably a software issue with an update to the Java. I'm not sure what it is. I can't get in. A couple other people sent me emails in. I apologize. There's no way I could fix it tonight. So we're just going to go on with the show, and our next guest is Stephen from Virginia. And Steve has had some pretty exciting experiences out there. Steve, how are you tonight?
Hey, Marco. Glad to be here, buddy. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Hey, Steve, why don't you tell everybody, this has happened very recently, and why don't you tell everybody just in your own words what took place and how it happened?
Actually, me and my friend of mine, we have a fishing hole that we actually visited quite often. It was kind of, we referred to it as the honey hole because it was actually very secluded from any homes or industries or anything. You actually have to hike in about 2.5 hours and another 2.5 hours to get out unless you go in by boat. But it was probably around midsummer. I know it was really hot. We were there. It was just him and I. We were fishing. And it wasn't dark yet. It was just, it was still light. You could probably see a good 100, 150 yards. And we had a little campfire going and a tent pitched and everything. And I just throwed my pole out and set my pole down. And I turned to say something to my friend. And something caught my attention up on the other side of the way there. And I asked him, I said, dude, do you see that thing up there? And he looked and he goes, yeah, what is that? I said, I don't know what it is. So we stood there for a few moments and just kind of watched it, and it didn't really seem as if it was moving. I guess if I had to describe it, it kind of looked, the best way I could explain it was it looked like the thing off of the movie Harry and the Hendersons. It was kind of real long-faced, if you will. Again, you know, it was quite a distance, but even at the distance that it was at, we could still see, you know, that it was rather large. And so we may have walked maybe 10 yards towards it, and it seemed as if it had turned towards us to look at us as it was squatted down, like in a squatting position with his knee elbows, kind of like laying on his knees, if you will. I'm not sure if he was, you know, fishing or just messing with the water or there to just drink, because it was, you know, pretty hot that afternoon. And so we decided that we wasn't going to go any further. As we sat there and it started to get dark, the whole hollow, that's actually the place we fished, was in a real deep hollow. There was a smell that came through the whole holler that later on that afternoon. And if I had to describe it, unfortunately my friend's not here with me tonight, but we both described it as like a wet dog smell. If you let your dog out in the rain and he comes in and shakes off it, that smell, it was just really rough. So, you know, we really didn't pay much attention to it. You know, we both had our assumptions, but being humans, you know, it's only in our nature to doubt. And so as the night progressed and we fished, there were times that actually lasted all night, actually, that it sounded as if someone was throwing, my buddy, he said it sounded like someone was throwing Volkswagens in the water. It was rather huge splashes. All night long, all you could hear is like a trees hitting trees, if you will, rocks being thrown, missing the water and hitting trees. But when they would get thrown and hit the water, I mean, it was a really, really huge splash. So, needless to say, we didn't sleep that night. And the next morning, you know, my buddy told me right before dawn, he's like, I'm pretty anxious about it getting daylight so we can walk up there and see if we can see what we saw last night. And I said, yeah, I'm, you know, pretty excited about that as well, you know, because we thought that perhaps it was a stump or, you know, maybe the light was casting on a rock or, you know, the side of a tree or something that may have just given us what we thought that we may have seen. So when daylight came, we stood in the same positions pretty much all night because we flattened the grass where we had stood. And there was nothing there, Marco. There was nothing there that that compared to what we've seen. Unfortunately, we couldn't get across the way because the waters was too deep to wade through, you know, to look for footprints or whatnot. But there was nothing there. It was just a little inlet, if you will, that the creature was squatted down at. And, you know, so we just basically come to a conclusion that that's what it was. And we don't tell our story much because some people that, you know, they just look at you like, you know, yeah, right. But
yeah, they think you're crazy or thinking you're, or that you're trying to make it up or something.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Or that you're seeing things.
Yeah, it was actually a very hair-raising experience, if you will.
Yes, it is, and to most people it is. It's not an easy thing. You said you got a pretty good look at it. It was though it was at a distance, and some of the features you could still see. Was there anything you could tell about the fur or the hair? Was it long on the body hair? Was it long, or could you tell that at all? Or was it dark, light? What color?
From where we were, it looked like it was a very dark brown, and it looked rather long. Mm-hmm. And kind of matty, if you will, like stuck together with burrs and stuff like that.
Right, like a dog or a long-haired dog or something.
Right, and its upper portion towards like its chest part. It was basically the same color but a little lighter.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what stood out the most was even at us being from a distance, the size of the creature from as far away as we were, you know, we, you know, just kind of with an assumption guessed that it had to be at least 7 foot, 8 foot tall because its head was, you know, a lot of people that we've told the story to, like, well, you know, it's probably a bear. But, you know, bears, their nose comes out, you know, like a muzzle.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This creature, if you will, its head was real long. It actually looked as if it had like a jawbone.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it was dark brown, like a real dark brown, and real shabby looking with a long face, and its arms were huge.
Oh, my gosh.
This is a conference call. I should be able to listen to it on the radio. I don't know how to do their thing live. I didn't save the other Bigfoot sighting, then?
Who is this?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Mark Sherchief.
This is what?
Mark Sherchief.
Oh, okay, Mark. Yeah. Can I put you on hold?
Sure.
I'm going to put you on mute, okay? Yeah, we're in the middle of the show right now, Mark.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. That was Mark, another gentleman that was going to come on tonight just to listen in and out. Go ahead, Steve. I'm sorry.
But as I was saying, you know, we could tell that this was a rather large creature, and we kind of automatically ruled out the possibility of, you know, a bear. And as far away as society that we were actually at, you know, I strongly believe there wasn't anybody on a hot day like that trying to play a prank or a hoax or anything like that. And, you know, the sounds of, you know, the rocks hitting the water, it was actually big enough to where, you know, basically it was a channel, but it was big enough. The water was constantly moving there anyway, but whatever it was throwing in the waters would actually send ripples past where we were fishing. So we knew that it was rather large rocks. And it's, you know, there was a bank across from us that was basically a cliff. So, you know, we knew that's where those rocks came from.
Wow.
And we,
well, man, I'll tell you, Steve, now you're going to, now you and your friend, you go up there fishing quite frequently, right?
Yes, we've been up there since that time, yes.
And you're, and seeing, are you, you hunt all as well, don't you?
Oh, yes, I'm an avid bow hunter.
That's what I thought, yeah. You know, welcome, well, first of all, I want to welcome you to the world of Bigfoot. And,
thank you.
And our family of Bigfoot people who have had encounters. And there's quite a few of them out there, and
right.
But it's each one is unique, and I want to thank you, really thank you for coming on the show and sharing your encounter experience with us. But the most important thing, we'd like to keep in touch with you, and as things progress, if you happen to, have any other experiences or encounters or even hear of other people. Now, we have another gentleman in Virginia that has also had an experience just about the same week that you did. And I have another caller. They didn't come on tonight because they were too frightened to come on. But there's three people in the same area. Two of them are friends and the other isn't. And they all live within a couple of miles of each other in Alabama. And all three of them within 3 days had an encounter. So it's amazing.
Well, you know, it's just, and until we had spoke, you know, I personally, you know, I would lay in bed and like anticipate, you know, just think over and over, did I really see what I thought I seen? You know, I caught myself trying to make reasoning for what I thought I seen, but logically, there's no other, you know, it couldn't have been anything else.
And, no, yeah, I understand. But I want to thank you. I want to thank you for coming on. And I will keep in touch with you.
That
I have your contact information.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And thank you for coming on the show. I'm going to mute you out. You're going to listen to the rest of the show. There's quite a few other guests on here. And you can listen to their encounter experience and compare it. How's that?
Okay. Sounds great. Thanks, Marco.
Thank you, Stephen. Hey, thank your friend as well.
I sure will.
Take care now. I'm going to mute you out, and you can just listen to the rest of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, it was Stephen from Virginia. I'm going to go to a quickie commercial, and we'll be right back.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at Searching for Bigfoot.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. And now we're going to go completely to the other side of the United States, to Washington, and we're going to talk to Doug. Doug, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm just fine. How are you guys?
I'm doing great. Well, Doug, you didn't have a personal encounter, but you do have a story to tell about encounters that took place. Could you tell us about that?
Let's see. In 2009, in the summer of 2009, I got a dispatch from the operators union to go out and work on a job in the Oregon Coast Range. And on this, you know, there's probably 200 people working this job, and there's two shifts. And my sister was dispatched to the same job, except she got there about a week before I did. And her foreman was one of the a bunch of people that were just summer help, and then there were very few people that lived in the area that were year-round. They kept them busy year-round. And her foreman was one of those guys. And the winter before that, so that was the winter of 2009, he was, him and his labor were driving, before they started this project, they built a bunch of similar to logging roads, but one of them they called the Dark Road, and the other one, I forget what it was called, but they had two roads basically on each side of this, of the new highway they're putting in, and so they go and they check these roads and make sure nothing, make sure there weren't any washouts, make sure everything was still okay, because the job site was 15 miles long, and when it rains, it gets right with the rain and program on the Oregon coast, so the weather's really inclement, and so people didn't like going out there at you know, in the off season, just because it was nasty, but someone had to check it. So him and his labor are going out to check it, and it took a while, so it was getting to be a little bit dark, you know, about dusk, and they came around the corner and came up onto something they'd never seen before. They describe it as a Sasquatch, and they watched it for a little bit, because when it's raining in the forest in the Coast Range, all you hear is rain hitting leaves. Someone could drive right up behind you, and you still wouldn't pick it up. And they were 20 or 30 feet back, and they just decided to watch it and see what it did. The foreman, when he relates the story, he says that that the thing's walking down the road, and it's got a duck in one hand, and it's every once in a while it stops and it'll take a bite out of the duck and then keep walking, and then it reached up and grabbed a branch from about 7 feet up and broke it off, and then just took off into the trees. And when they got back, this guy's labor quit. That was the last day he ever worked on that job. And if you know anything about construction, for the past few years, it's a real big deal to quit a job, because there's not a lot out there. So he just, when they got back, he quit, and the foreman doesn't, it takes a lot to get him to talk about this. And you know, I used to believe when I was a kid, because my uncle used to be a logger out in the woods, and he had some stories about it, and had some tapes of what he said were Bigfoot sounds. But I was diagnosed with sleep apnea, which is something I've had my whole life. But when I started getting it, treated, I don't like to sleep without electricity anymore, just because I don't feel right if I don't get decent sleep. So I don't do a whole lot of camping anymore. And so now, you know, and you get to where you're like, did I really believe that? Or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I really kind of, you know, I was really kind of skeptical about it. And so when I heard this story, it was just like, yeah, whatever. You know, maybe they should start drug testing the year-round help too. And but what happened towards the end of the summer is they have big cuts and fills. And in one of the bigger cuts, they put light plants up at the top of the cuts. And I mean, they've probably got 100 light plants on this job. And so they've got whole crews that all they do is drive around all night and fuel up light plants. And so one of the laborers was, one laborer was up above, and there were two laborers down below in the cut. And this particular cut had a kind of an intermediate level where they had a row of light plants. And they had a top level, and at the very, very end of that top level, they had a light plant pointed off towards another curve in the road. So, and he was up fueling that upper light plant when a Sasquatch came walking out onto that second level, and the creature was just sitting there and walking down and kind of investigating the light plants. And this, you know, it got to be where he was out there for 15 minutes, and the guy up above didn't want to move, and so he finally grabbed a rock and threw it at him, and the Sasquatch hollered at him and ran back into the woods.
Wow.
And that was the second one, and he wouldn't talk about that. We had to get that from his dad, who was also an operator on the job, finally told us what had happened, because he wouldn't work night shift anymore, and he wouldn't do that job even on day shift after that. And so, and because I'm a big guy, kind of a big hairy guy, the joke was the day after it happened that I had been out tromping around at night, and that everyone wanted to see my shoulder and see if I had a bruise from where they threw a rock at me. So it was met with skepticism, but there were three witnesses to it, and they don't want to talk about it, but they were, you know, they told the story once and it got out, and so that's my story.
Well, Doug, I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing it with us, and also if you don't mind, I'd like to keep in contact with you, and if anything, you know, a lot of things take place around in the Washington area there, and
yeah.
If you happen to hear any more or anything, keep in touch with me. You have my numbers and things. I have yours.
Okay.
Out there on an expedition.
What was really interesting about this is when this was the two sightings were probably 9 months apart.
Sure.
But geographically, they were probably within 100 yards of each other. Because we worked that summer, the cuts got wider and wider, you know, because that's what happens. As you get deeper, it goes further out. So that middle tier was probably only 150 yards away from the dark road, and they were in the same, like, station section of each other where the two sightings were. So I kind of think it was probably the same animal.
Oh, it very well could have been.
So,
well, again, I want to thank you for coming on, Doug.
Okay.
I'm running short on time, but I'll tell you, thanks for coming on and sharing the story. I'm going to mute you out, but you can listen to the rest of the show on the phone if you'd like.
Oh, I sure will.
I'll keep in contact with you, okay? Thank you.
Okay, thanks for
and
listening.
Welcome to the world of Sasquatch, my friend.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Doug from Washington. Our next guest is Ron from Virginia. And Ron had some pretty exciting experience as well. Ron, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, Ron, why don't you tell us about what took place on your encounter?
Well, mine's kind of short and sweet. It's on a road that I've been traveling since I was a little boy, and it's right at the edge of dark, and it wasn't no further than about 100 yards in front of me. Something about, I want to say about 7-8 foot tall, hairy. Took one step in the road and was gone.
Wow. Now, you had a good look at this thing?
Well, I never seen no face or nothing because it didn't look at me.
But you had an outline. About how big was it that it appeared to you?
It was huge. It looked like it was built like a wrestler, but 8 foot tall.
Uh-huh. And could you tell anything about the features, like the head, is it pointed, and neck, or anything like that, or anything special?
I really couldn't tell you. It happened so quick. I know it's a wide road, and I know I can't step. It takes me 4 or 5 steps to get across it. And this thing hit the road in one step and was gone. And on the other side of the road, it's a dirt road and had a cable across. So when he went across that road, he had to jump the cable and go down through a thicket. And I was right there. As soon as I see him, and I look down that road, and I ain't seen nothing.
Oh, my gosh. That's something else.
Well, now, made a believer out of me.
I can imagine, yeah. Now, when you, you know, obviously, after you saw this thing, did you question yourself? Did you just question what you saw? I mean, everybody does, but I just wanted to know how you felt.
Yeah, it scared the dickens out of me, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yes, it would, seeing something that big. And it's pretty fast, too, right?
Well, me and my daddy used to hunt all that property around there, I mean, for years, and I've never seen nothing like it.
Makes you kind of apprehensive about going hunting, huh?
Yeah.
I know.
I'm glad I've seen it, though. It made a believe out of me.
Yeah. Now, have you had any problems when you shared the story with any of your friends or family? Have you had any problems with people believing
it? Yeah, I know a lot of people asked me what I was drinking that day.
Yeah. Well, that's normal, and I hope you don't take that the wrong way. It's just a normal circumstance that
It's been a bunch of sightings around this area. So once they found out about that, you know, it's a totally different story now.
Yeah, and let me tell you, Virginia is a very we have a lot of reports from Virginia. We have several people in Virginia, Ron, that live in the whole vicinity out there, and have had. In fact, we did an expedition there last fall.
Wow!
And one of our good friends, Anthony, actually had a cast footprint, peanut butter on a log. We found a trail, a whole bunch of good, good evidence. And tracks and things,
uh-huh.
And tree twists, big tree twists and things like that. Trees uprooted and stuck upside down in the ground. Bears can't do that.
He's in Virginia, I can tell you that. I've seen him.
Well, Ron, you know, I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. And I'm hoping that that you're going to keep in contact with us as well.
Sure will.
If anything transpires, please give me a call anytime. You have my numbers. And don't be afraid to call me. I'm available.
I sure will.
Anytime.
I'm keeping my eyes open now.
I know. And I wanted to, again, welcome you to the world of Sasquatch.
Thank you.
And we'll keep in touch with you. And if we're out your way or something, maybe Tom will give you a call and maybe we'll stop by and see you.
Okay.
If that's all right, well, we'll call you ahead of time.
We're not
just going to... We won't surprise you and all of a sudden come up to your door.
You can do that too. I don't care.
But thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And
thank you for having me on.
I'm going to mute you out. You can listen to the rest of the program on the telephone if you'd like.
Yeah, I will, but it's about 3 hours past my bedtime.
Oh, okay. That's okay too. I know it's getting late out there. So thanks thanks for coming on and taking the
all
time
right,
to
so
do
thank
that.
You.
Good night now. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Ron from Virginia. We're going to go back out now to we're going to go to Arizona. And we're going to talk to a good friend out there, George. George, how are you tonight?
I'm here, Marco, doing good.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, George, we had George on a couple years ago, and we've been... George has been following us and keeping in tune with us. But I wanted to bring George on tonight because George is in an area, you know, we're always in a specific area in Arizona, or up and towards the Four Corners area. But George is a little more centrally located. And he's had an encounter. I wanted to invite him to let us know and tell us about his encounter experience that he had. George, could you do that?
Yeah, Marco. This actually occurred up in Utah.
Yeah.
Oh, probably about back in 92 or so.
Right.
I went on a tour up there in the Provo, American Fork area. Provo is where the state hospital is located at. American Fork is there's a building that's located in American Fork that's a subsidiary of the state hospital. And when you walk into that building, it's like going into a carnival sideshow. You've got in short all your freaks of nature. That's where they keep them. People that's, they're, you know, twins joined at the spine or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People with three arms, you know, just everything you can imagine you'll see there. And it's kind of a shock when you walk into the place and they tell you to stay out of certain areas. They'll keep you out of certain areas to where you can look at these people at a distance. But the one thing that I remember the most when I went on this tour was seeing this one woman that was there. They kept her in a cage, in a barred cage. She was kept, you know, the cage was made of bars, and she was in a dress, and they warned us ahead of time, don't put your hand in there. They had it roped off, you know, 3 to 4 feet around the cage, and they indicated that she does not like people. Do not offer your hand to her, glance at her, and move on. But I got up to the cage, and I looked at her, and she looked back at me, and it gave me a very strange feeling. It was like I had made a connection. I actually wanted to reach out and touch the side of her face. But this woman she had been caught when she was a small child up in the woods of Oregon. At that time when I saw her, she was probably in her mid to late 30s.
Uh-huh. And George, could you describe her? Could you describe her kind of like, how big was she? How tall
she
about?
I would say she was probably about 5'10 or so. She was sitting on a tall stool.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't any problem for her to sit there flat-footed.
I understand.
But they said she didn't like shoes, and you could see her feet.
Right.
At the bottom of the dress. She was very well groomed. She was covered with long black hair.
Uh-huh.
Including the major proportion of her face, with the exception of around her eyes. Top portion of her nose. Her forehead didn't have any hair. But the rest of her was covered in hair. Black hair. She had on her head, she had long black hair. Like I say, she was very well groomed. If it hadn't been for the hair, she would have been a very attractive woman.
Really? When you look at the facial features, the nose, the eyes, and the mouth,
is it
very human-like?
The facial features was very human.
Uh-huh.
The body was very human.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there was no doubt in my mind at that point that I was looking at somebody that was the offspring of Bigfoot. You know, there was just no doubt in my mind about it. Her eyes were black. The irises in her eyes were black.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, she's very, very attractive. And I, to be perfectly honest with you, I started to reach out and touch her. And they pulled my hand back and said, don't touch her. She doesn't like to be touched. But she made no aggressive move toward me. But they rushed us on out of the building. And I thought about that for many, many years. You know, there's only maybe two or three people I ever told that story to. You were one of them. When I talked to you a couple of years ago.
Sure.
See, I kind of keep that story to myself.
Well, George, can I ask you a question? Are you
sure.
familiar with others from the 1800s, the late 1800s, nearly 1900, but there in Russia, a small town way out in the, well, it's not Siberia, but it was close to that, in a very remote small town, a village. And it's called Zaina, and she was Zaina, and it was a female that was captured. Very similar to what you're saying here, and they had her. The townspeople had her in a cage for 2 or 3 years, and she was very aggressive and very rowdy, and but they kept her in the cage to keep obviously the people safe, and then after a couple of years, they'd give her. Alcohol. She loved alcohol.
Uh-huh.
And actually, she had, two or three kids from the towns. You know, people would get drunk and actually lay with her. And she had children. And one of the things that they were trying to do here recently was to try to go back to the DNA portion of this and find her grave. And the last child they had was still alive. I think he died in 1950-something, and they were trying to find his grave and try to... the children were normal, actually. They were large, but they were normal. But she was not. She was never really, she was kind of like lethargic, big, slow-moving, very powerful. And the first child she had died because she tried to wash it in ice cold water, and it was partly human, and it died. But have you ever heard of that one?
No, I've never heard of that story, Marco.
I'm going to send you a link.
I'm glad you told me about it. I hope you do send me a link on
that.
Yeah,
one. It's a very, very story. But it reminded me, when you told me that story, that's what it reminded me of. We did a show on that about a few years back, and it reminded me of the very same kind of a thing, and, of your experience and what you experienced when you seen that, because it's really interesting, and they had this, they had her in a cage, right?
Yeah.
Like a... I don't know, it was not a zoo, but a hospital area or something, right?
Well, this woman here, they told me that they took her they had a yard in the back, and they would let her go out into the yard, and a couple of people would go out with her and sit with her and talk to her, and they never said whether she ever could talk or not.
Right.
But, it makes you wonder if perhaps there have been times that Bigfoot has literally, kidnapped women or young girls, and they've had offspring with them.
Well, the Native Americans have legends that go back to that, where they had raids and villages and things, and children were taken, and there's stories about that, and so it very well could be. There's not very much information concerning that, and that's what makes it very difficult. But that's why this the Zaina story was so. What I wanted to do was have you take a look at the story and take a look at some of the pictures they had of. The drawings and other things they had of her, and see what you thought. How about that?
Marco, send me an email on that. I would really be.
Oh, absolutely! I'm going to send you the links and the story and a bunch of other things on it. George, I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing this again, because it's been a long time since we've had you on the show, And this was such a unique story and experience that you experienced. And we've had a couple others, not the same, but similar to that, in a different circumstance. And so, you know, it's what it tells you is that this is not the only, you know, there are instances where these creatures may have been captured and put, and we just don't know about it, or it's not, the word doesn't get around very often, I guess. But they could very well exist. And I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your story again, and I'll keep in touch with you, George. You got my number now, and you can call me anytime.
Okay, Marco, what I'm going to do is matter of fact, what I'll do is I'll actually program your number into my phone.
Okay, my friend. And I'll tomorrow sometime I'm going to send you some of the links for Zena.
Okay. Hey, I'd sure appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for coming on tonight.
In the meantime, you take care.
You too, George, and thank you.
Yeah.
Good night now. Ladies and gentlemen, that's George from Arizona. And now we come to a good old friend of ours from West Virginia, Chris. Chris, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing awesome. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. My gosh, I'm sorry I had to wait so long, but we had quite of a full show here. What did you think?
Yes, you did. Great show, by the way, and a lot of interesting stories you got there. That one guy who was describing the lady that they kept in the cage, at first I thought he was talking about one of my ex-wives.
I understand. Well, no, we've actually had a couple of people that have had that kind of an experience, and George, but George was one of the first ones, and it's so unique, you know, that he was able to see something like that and experience it, and we had a couple other people where they were in more of a clandestine atmosphere, where they'd seen these creatures in cages, female and male, mm-hmm. in cages. With the men in black, there's a couple of people that had those experiences, and down in around the southern states, and so it's that was a couple of years ago as well. So how you been doing, Chris? What's been going on in your area?
I have been so busy. I'm still in college full time and doing music, and everything's still happening and going on, progressing forward. And I go out quite often. In fact, I was out last night. And any time that I have a full moon, I try to get out because you don't need as much light. It's easier to see things. And it just seems like the Bigfoot are more active during full moon cycles for some reason. Not sure why. Probably the same reason why we're more active on full moon cycles. But a lot of in this area, I had a cable guy that came by yesterday. Now, this is the second cable guy that's came to my house on repair for my internet. And he's from this area. Been living in this family, this area, his whole life. And I was telling him about where my son was on your show and had seen the dog face Bigfoot.
Yes.
And I can't remember what name he called it. It sounded like a Native American name. Never heard the name before.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, yeah, everybody in this area knows about that one that you're talking about. And it's well seen in this area. And I've had so many different close encounters, if you'd call it that, and it's always out in this area, but I can't quite get it. And when I find it, for example, I have the junior Bigfoot team here, the bunch of the kids that go out Bigfoot looking.
Yeah.
You know, now, this is between me and you. I knew when I put together the junior Bigfoot, we probably would not see a Bigfoot because you can't have a group of kids together and be quiet.
Right, I understand.
I mean, it's pretty loud, and I try to keep them quiet and observant, but it's more to show them tracks and something of an adrenaline rush, if you call it that. But we did encounter one night with all the kids that were out here looking down the tracks of the lights. There was something on two legs, bipedal, that was walking and trying to get out of our light range, and it didn't act like a human, and its eyes were very reflective, and it kept trying to go behind a tree. Well, that's exactly what my son probably had seen because it was just less than a quarter mile away, and that sounds exactly like what the guy was talking about. In fact, while we're here, let me close my door because my dog is after something out here tonight. And as soon as I get off the phone with you guys, me and my security guard, David Scott, he's like 7 foot tall almost. We're going out looking here in just a little bit. We left some peanut butter baits out and different things in the area, so we're going to go out and see if we can have any luck.
Yeah, it's good. It'd be great.
Well, there's just so many areas out here. I recently went, me and Ricky Skeens, the guy, last year we went up looking at, over the summer, I'm sorry, it went a year ago, we went up to find an old abandoned coal mine that had been abandoned for like 100 years. Mm-hmm. Never could find the coal mine. And it was just last week we stumbled across the area where we believed that the coal mine was at. We were just on the wrong strip mine road, if you call it that. And there's just so much territory here in West Virginia that's just unexplored, where there's potentially, you know, areas that they could be living in. Because if you think about these old coal mines that were, you know, just tapped out, there's no more coal that they were looking for and just left to rot to the earth, that would be a perfect place for these things to escape the cold winters that we have here.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we look around the waterways, coal mine, you know, areas where we have caves, any place to shelter.
Well, West Virginia has many waterways, and there's many ponds and many streams. Every mountain in West Virginia probably at least has a couple of streams on it.
Yeah.
We have many locations for fresh water. There's plenty, abundant wildlife to feed from, the deer especially, the coons, little rodents, etc., and not to mention all the fruits and berries from all the trees. It's a lot to eat here for these creatures.
Now, the other day in Alabama, you ain't never going to believe this. A guy was driving home, and as he was driving home, he called me on his cell phone on the Bigfoot hotline, and he was excited. He'd just seen a creature, and he got home and he was going to tell his family about it, and he was afraid to do that because he knew they were going to, you know, razz him. But
that's the problem that a lot of people encounter. What you're talking about, they see something and they clam up because they don't want to tell anybody because they're like, well, they're going to think I'm crazy. And I used to be that way. I mean, my son was that way.
Well, see, he was a firefighter and, you know, a volunteer firefighter because, you know, in South Carolina, Virginia, or South Carolina and in Alabama, some of those places, the small towns have volunteer firefighting departments. It's all volunteer, right? And, so it's volunteered from the actual population that go in and fight the fires. And his friend called me the next day, and he was out that day, and he had just gotten back. And this is not an area that's not populated. That's in an area that has a swampy kind of a ground to it. And he had an encounter not more than a half a mile from where this other guy had one.
Wow.
And then I got another call the same day, and it was from this guy's friend. Now, this other guy was a firefighter, just like he belonged to the same volunteer firefighting department as the other guy did. It wasn't best friends or anything, but they were just, you know, they knew each other. But this other guy was this guy's friend that had gave me the first call, and he called and he said, "Well, you know, this other guy was really, really, really shy, and he had taken a lot of heat from his family."
Yes.
And ridicule and stuff from his family and friends. But he said he believed it because about a year before that, he had an encounter in the same area. And
wow.
He was afraid to tell anybody. So when he heard this guy, he got together with him, and then he decided to call me to let me know that he'd also seen it. So three people in probably an area of a little over a mile, you know, area, had three encounters, two of them within a week, or within a day, actually, and one a few months prior. Isn't that something
wow.
else?
That's crazy. And for us, for the people like myself and all of the your guests that are out there that do this, you know, we go through some extreme situations. Like, I'll never forget that time when I went with Tom, and we went to the White Mountains Apache reservations with Rob Price. Mitch and a bunch of us were out there, but me and Rob stayed out there for over a month in the wintertime.
Right.
And we had a blizzard that came in, and it shut down the interstate from Kingman all the way up to Flagstaff. That's 130 to 150 miles of the interstate. It was shut down with 100-mile-an-hour winds up on the mountain where we had been staying at.
Right.
And if you put yourself in these elements to go out and look, you're a serious professional researcher or crazy. And I'm probably both, but... You know, after you find your first encounter out there, and some of your guests that have called in tonight that have seen it for the first time, that's what it takes, because there's so many people out there that just don't believe or they're not sure. But when you get your first sighting and you know that it wasn't a bear, and you know it wasn't a person, you're hooked. I don't care who you are. I don't have anybody that hadn't seen a Bigfoot that wasn't hooked. And your endeavors, you'll find yourself always looking.
It changes your life.
It does. And you'll find yourself looking. You may be camping and observing out in the woods while everybody is observing the campfire.
Right. Gosh. Well, Chris, hey, I want to thank you for coming on, and it's been a long time. It's been a while, about 6-8 months now since you've been on here.
It's been a while. My son was even asking me, I was like, Dad, I'd like to go back on the show, tell him about my Bigfoot sightings. Like, well, they remember you. and we talk about, he still, to this day, he talks about his Bigfoot sighting every day.
Oh, yeah.
He was, I think, three and a half years old when he got on your show, when he seen the Bigfoot out here.
Well, you know, we've had three or four other encounters of a dog-faced Bigfoot Wisconsin, Minnesota. Wisconsin's been the norm. Minnesota, about 6-8 months ago. I think Kentucky. And the other was, where was it? Was it West Virginia? Where was it? Georgia? I think it was Georgia. And, I mean, so people are seeing this thing, and it's kind of a weird species, you know. It's a different breed, but my goodness.
Well, the guy that you're going to send the links to on the female Bigfoot, I'd like to actually put me on that link also, because I like.
Oh no, yeah,
that.
I will. I'll
I'm familiar with that story.
I had a whole article I posted on it several years ago, but I'm gonna send you the links to it. It's pretty neat.
I remember the story, and I remember the research on it, and it was quite in depth about it, and it was very fascinating. I couldn't move. I sat there and read it word for word. You know, I like stuff like that I could read, because, you know, everything you read out there, you don't know for a fact whether it's true or not. It could be something off of Wikipedia. But regardless, if you listen with both ears, you could pick out who's telling the truth, what they saw, or what they believe what they saw. And it just actually expands your knowledge of what you already know. And when you're out there in the field researching for this, because a lot of people only look down into the holes and down in the ground and this and that, but now I find myself looking up in the trees and down in the holes. Because when you're a kid looking for Easter eggs, you find yourself looking on the ground for the eggs when sometimes they're hidden in the trees and around you.
You got it.
These things are quite capable of climbing as well.
By gosh. Well, I want to keep in touch with you, Chris, and I'll send you that information. Thanks for coming on tonight and sharing with us, and it's nice to talk to you again.
You're welcome.
Late.
Have a great evening. It's great.
And you too. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Well, everybody, that concludes. Here we come to the end of another show. I'd like to wish everybody. Tom should be back next week, and I want to wish everybody. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being a part of our family. And we're going to see you keep Bigfooting and keep on trucking. We'll see you next week, everybody. Good night now.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legend, tales, and facts.